And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines in detail with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena, and happy Monday. Excuse me.
Happy Monday indeed. Did you dye your hair?
No.
It looks more black. It just, I'm distracted. Really? Good morning.
Gosh, is it because I'm wearing black? I don't know.
Happy Monday to you too. Okay.
Happy Monday. I need to check, see if anything's changed.
For our listeners who tune in via podcast, my apologies. I know you don't have a visual on that app.
Yeah, I think it's best.
Too humble, but let's get started. Many headlines to cover. The news waits for no one. It doesn't sleep over the weekend either. We're going to begin with the latest on the medical strike. Our first keyword of the day.
Professors resign.
So many medical professors are planning to submit their resignation letters today, as previously announced. This is expected to escalate tensions between the government and medical community. But at least based on what the president had to say, there's just a tiny, tiny inkling of hope. Are both sides ready to maybe take one step back and start negotiating? What's the latest?
That is the question, isn't it? But yeah, that inkling of an olive branch, if you will. But we'll have to see if anything comes about from it. Now, while the professors have stated they will continue to provide care until their resignations are processed, they will limit their working hours to the legally mandated 52 hours per week for outpatient care, surgeries and inpatient care. This is something we mentioned last week. Most of the 40 medical schools of which the professors reside are expected to participate in this collective resignation. Each school has been asking its professors whether they want to resign as a group. Now, it is expected that the universities won't accept the resignations right away, so the immediate impact on medical services might not be severe. But of course, the situation can always escalate, as we have seen ever since this whole fiasco has started. Now, the conflict might further intensify this week with the expected suspension of medical licenses for some residents who are still on strike. However, there's also a glimmer of hope for, as you say, opening dialogue. The presidential office has directed exploring what they're calling more flexible approaches to the suspension issue. President Yoon, for example, urged Prime Minister Han Duck-soo to form a constructive consultative body to promote dialogue with medical workers. So we'll have to see whether the striking training doctors and other doctors in the medical field are willing to engage in these proposals. Now, the professors are asking for more than just talks between the doctors and the government. They also want the government to cancel its decision to increase the number of medical students, although that seems unlikely. The government is pretty adamant of sticking to its plan. The government has been asking the medical community to create a channel for dialogue as well. But the big difference in positions between them remains, of course, a big barrier to starting discussions. The next few days will actually be critical to see if both sides can find a way to talk. So we'll have to see if there's any leeway. But from what we have seen up until now, it looks a bit unlikely.
We'll wait and see. And let's move on to our second key word on public housing regulations, our second pick of the day.
Encouraging births.
So a new priority system will be in place today for families with newborns under 2 years old to apply for public housing units known as new homes. Can you tell us more about the plan?
Right. So when families apply for an apartment, they can add up the time, basically, they and their spouse have been saving in their housing savings accounts to get extra points, up to three more. So they're basically in a better position to get the housing, the new home that they applied for or want. Now, this program is part of updates to housing supply rules set by the Land Ministry. For the special offer for newborns, it doesn't matter if you're married or not, as long as you have a child within 2 years. And they're planning to give out about 70,000 homes a year under this scheme. So basically another part of efforts and plans to encourage newborns to alleviate the low birth rate issue here in Korea. Now, this includes new homes, private houses and public rental homes as well. Now, if you win a home through this special deal for newborns, the government will also help with a special loan to help you move in. They'll figure out the details after talking it over with related organisations. For public homes, they're making it easier for families with babies born after March 28th last year to qualify by boosting income and asset limits by up to 20%. So expanding the number of people eligible. Now, another change is the relaxation of the criteria for special allocations for multi-child families in both public and private housing sectors, reducing the required number of children from 3 to 2. Additionally, married couples can now apply for housing separately without disqualifying each other if both win. So basically, if you're married and you each put in an application, then basically you're doubling your chances and you won't be disqualified or at a disadvantage because of it. Before, if you both won basically a special housing spot or got a home in a regulated area, they couldn't take it because it meant there was a conflicting application. So it doesn't matter. Also, if a spouse has won a housing application before or owns a house, they're still eligible. So basically a relaxation of the rules and regulations in terms of applying for such public housing.
At least for parents of newborns under the age of 2, as you've said. Yes. Okay, let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Export regulations.
So it has been about a year since the Japanese government lifted its export restrictions on semiconductor materials to Korea. Now, despite this, Korean companies have been working on reducing dependency on Japan, resulting in Japanese companies not being able to regain their lost market share right here in Korea.
Right. So Asahi Shimbun analyzed basically the impact of Japan's semiconductor material export restrictions. Now, in response, just to take you back into the background of this, the 2018 Supreme Court ruling ordered Japanese companies to compensate wartime labor victims. Japan imposed export restrictions in July 2019 on three critical semiconductor materials to Korea, and this of course led to Korea to file a complaint with the World Trade Organization. The export controls were lifted by Japan following the Korea's announcement of a solution to the forced labor compensation issue last March. Of course, that started its own controversy, but this also led to Korea withdrawing its WTO complaint. Now, before the export restrictions, Japan accounted for over 40% of Korea's imports of certain semiconductor materials, so quite a lot. Now, however, this share plummeted immediately following the imposition of the restrictions and has only partially recovered, remaining significantly below pre-restriction levels. Now, the impact of the export controls was significant, with one Japanese chemical manufacturer experiencing a substantial decrease in profits due to the inability to basically export to Korea. Now, this company is Morita Chemical Industries, a manufacturer of hydrogen fluoride, which was unable to export to Korea, accounted for over 90% of its export volume. So any restrictions for that firm, of course, was detrimental. And as a result, its annual net profit decreased by 90% after the restrictions. Now, despite the lifting of restrictions last year, the firm said that exports to Korea are unlikely to return to previous levels and expressed a desire to expand to other markets such as the United States. And there's also been some other Japanese companies that have tried to go around the rules by sending their products through other countries, so not directly to Korea, but through a third country. Some have even decided to set up shop in Korea as well, making their products here in the country. Now, the Korean government and companies are accelerating, in the meantime, the domestic production of semiconductor materials that have been dependent on Japan. Now, recognizing the risks of depending on the Japanese semiconductor materials and manufacturing equipment at that, this whole push for localization started from the Moon Jae-in administration, and it has basically continued over to the Yoon administration as well. It set a goal to increase the domestic production rate of these materials and parts from 30% in 2022 to 50% by the year 2030. However, Asahi Shimbun notes the challenge of replacing or localizing products in areas where Japanese companies have high competitiveness, saying that, yes, although the Korean companies and government are trying to localize things, there's still things that the Japanese companies are better at producing and doing. And despite efforts, Japan continues to maintain a significant share, however, in the Korean market for some semiconductor materials. So They're basically saying that the Korean market is not totally independent of the Japanese market, and it does rely on it somewhat. But of course, we'll have to see down the years to see how much that dependency is reduced, if at all. So yeah, there you have it. That's the assessment anyway by the Asahi Shimbun.
All right, with that, I move on to addressing fruitflation, our fourth keyword of the day.
Price drop.
I only realized over the weekend that's a very specifically Korean term. I can't find fruitflation, the word anyway, right, coined in any other country. So I'm wondering if it's just very specifically Korean. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just saying, I'm still getting used to it. It sounds a bit funny every time I hear it, but there you have it.
You know, the funny thing about new terminologies is that we got to slow down, like fruitflation. Yeah. It just sounds more convincing that way. Okay.
Yeah.
So retail prices of apples and pears have fallen more than 10% since the government's actions to stabilize prices. Now, wholesale prices are still more than twice as high as a year ago, and the price is expected to continue to strengthen before the summer fruit harvest. Fundamentally, as we've discussed for weeks now, there isn't much we can do when there's less supply. We have to wait for the next harvest season. But the government can certainly intervene and inject money to drop the prices for the time being.
Yeah, so the price of apples in stores, they did go up by more than 11% actually after the government started helping with these discounts. So it seems to have worked to an extent.
Sure.
And we'll just have to see how long, if it is a long-term solution, but many experts are a bit skeptical about that. This whole scheme included putting 150 billion won towards making food prices more stable. So they basically threw money at the issue, and we'll have to see if it is a short-term solution. Pear prices also dropped by more than 13%. Retail prices for tomatoes and strawberries also decreased, but prices for oranges and mangoes saw a slight increase. Imported fruits like bananas and pineapples also fell too, actually. Now, the recent decline in retail prices is attributed to the large-scale discount support and promotional events by retailers as well. There's been a lot of sales going on in supermarkets. However, retail prices for apples and pears remain high compared to the previous year, with wholesale prices for these fruits still significantly higher than last year as well. So, yeah, if, on the grand scheme of things, and relatively speaking, in a on-year comparison, that's still quite expensive. Now, the expected arrival of new fruits in July and August in the summer suggests that the prices for apples and pears may remain high for the time being. So, yes, a slight dip in the prices, but still high. And of course, all of this is due to a number of factors, like last year's weather disasters and significantly reduced production of apples and pears. Now, the government's efforts to increase market supply during peak holiday seasons have led to a slight shortage of stored stock as well. The government plans to continue supporting supply price and discount promotions until the new fruit harvest in the summer. They also aim to diversify fruit consumption by increasing the supply of imported fruits like bananas and oranges. So basically trying to reduce people's consumption of highly sought-after fruits like apples and pears, and maybe encouraging them to eat something else and, you know, diversify their fruit portfolio, if you will. Fruit folio. There you
no,
go.
Absolutely not. That's
sorry,
not
they
a thing.
Can, I can.
It's something that Adam is pushing. I'm sorry, say tomato and banana again.
Tomato and banana.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, yes. But anyway, this is something that experts are also trying to encourage as well.
Okay.
More varieties of fruits, developing more varieties of fruits that are more resistant to climate change and weather fluctuations as well is something that's being recommended. So we'll have to see if we're getting more newly developed fruits, like, I don't know, shine muscat and all that type of thing. But
I also hear every year there's always a new type of grapes, like, in the horizon. There's one that's been in the works for years, meant to be twice as sweet as shine muscat. I don't even know if that stops being fruit at that point. That sounds candied.
Yeah. Why grapes as well?
I don't know. It was also strawberries for a while, not just us, in our neighboring country, Japan, too. Okay.
That's true, yeah.
But we digress. So for the time being, anyway, a slight price dip for apples apples and pears. That seemed to be the main measurement for this fruitflation indice. We'll have to wait and see, as you've said, if that is just a short-term solution. Now let's move on to the quickly approaching general elections campaign pledges. We're hearing more of it in detail. Definitely charged with a sense of hope there. Take it with a grain of salt, but nonetheless, let's look at the promises. Our fifth keyword of the day.
Campaign pledges.
So rival parties are stepping up their campaigns ahead of the general elections. Now down to the last wire, let's begin with the People Power Party.
Yeah, so their main kind of vow, or the main vow of the People Power Party head, or emergency committee head, Han Dong-hun, is about to abolish capital gains tax. But it noted that it is likely to be discarded due to opposition from the Democratic Party. So it's basically blaming the DP of any restriction in trying to abolish that capital gains tax. Han Dong-hun said the DP must be judged in the general election, which is holding back the abolition of the tax. Now, the outcome of the general election will determine whether the capital gains tax will be abolished or implemented, according to Han. So basically encouraging voters to decide on what they want. Meanwhile, the PPP has formed committees focusing on economic and social improvements, asserting their capacity to address livelihood issues. Something is saying that the DP is incapable of. Today, Han also visits four critical electoral districts in Seoul to garner voter support. He'll be going to markets in the afternoon as well to conjure up, to stomp the grounds there and to conjure up some support as well.
And it seems the DP wants to double down on sort of this cash for all incentive, universal basic income, a long flagged sort of policy and a pledge by DP chief Lee Jae-myung. So what has the Democratic Party got within the works?
Right, so Lee Jae-myung is busy on the campaign trail as well. He's proposed what is roughly translated to Livelihood Recovery Support Fund, basically suggesting a payment of 251 per person and an average of 1,000,000 won per household to address the what he's calling economic emergency, basically comparing it to the disaster support funds that were distributed during the pandemic. Now, he estimated the required funds for this proposal to be around 13 trillion won, contrasting it with the perceived wastefulness of what he called of the Yoon administration's tax cuts for the wealthy and deceptive campaign promises. Now, today he'll be visiting the Nakdong River Belt area and other areas in South Gyeongsang province today to garner up support in that area. So there you have it. So a lot of mudslinging still happening between the two parties.
All right. Thank you very much, Adam, for today's coverage. We'll see you again tomorrow.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.